I'm going to tell you I don't have any solid source for the idea, but I think that it's a possibility. Okay. The question, let me start with a few questions that bring me to the conclusion that I came to. The Egyptians were punished twice. Once on Leil Pesach, the firstborn were killed, and that was seemingly mida keneged mida, in kind, that they killed our children, and their firstborn. Klal Yisrael are considered the firstborn of the Jewish, of the Ribono Shel Olam, and it says that in the Torah, right? If you don't let my firstborn go, I'm going to kill your firstborn. That's what God warned Paro from the very outset. So that seemed to have been punished in kind. But it wasn't the people who actually punished the Jewish people or hurt them, because a lot of these Bechoros weren't even Egyptians who were killed. Right? And it also resulted in the fact that the Jewish firstborn, because the Egyptian firstborn were killed, the Jewish firstborn were sanctified. Okay. But there was another punishment. And that was 7 days later, Kriyas Yamsuf, where the Egyptians were drowned in the sea. Why was it necessary to have two different punishments? One, and both of them seem to have been punishment in kind. You drowned our children, you're going to be drowned. You oppressed our firstborn, the firstborn of God, your firstborn are going to be killed. Okay? So why were they, first of all, why were there a need for two different punishments? And why were they in two different times? Why couldn't it all be happening at the same time? Why didn't God just drown the Egyptians in the Nile? Make it overflow or whatever, or bring a flood to Egypt, and when they killed the firstborn, kill the oppressors also and drown them. Why was it 7 days later? Also, it says that Yisro was inspired very much by Kibat Dovar Asher Zodu Aleihem. When he saw Kriyas Yamsuf, he saw the splitting of the Red Sea, and he saw that God punishes in kind, that they drowned, and they were drowned, right? That impressed him, and he realized then that God is true, more than all the other false gods. Why wasn't Yisro impressed with Makas Bechoros, where God smote the Egyptian firstborn? Same idea. Why did he have to wait till Kriyas Yamsu for Yisro to be impressed? Why wasn't he impressed before? Because of all these questions, I want to say the following. That really, there were two ideas that resulted from Yetzias Mitzrayim, from the Exodus, from the redemption. The first, the Eser Makos, the 10 plagues, which culminated in the plague of Makas Bechoros, right, showed that God was the God of Israel. The God of the Jews, Elohei HaIvrim, that's how they came to Paro. Right? We want to go out 3 days and serve our God. And God champions the cause of the Jewish people. Okay, and the Jewish people are his firstborn, and therefore if you mess with his firstborn, he's going to mess with your firstborn. It wasn't necessarily to punish the evildoers of Mitzrayim. It was to punish Mitzrayim in general, in kind, mida keneged mida. And however, there was a second idea, and that idea was to show that God was not only the God of the Jews, he was the God of the entire world, and that God brought justice to the world, not necessarily for the sake of the Jews. The Jews were already redeemed. They were out of Egypt when he drowned the Egyptians, and God could have saved the Jews in 100 different ways besides splitting the sea and drowning Paro and his hosts. And the truth is that the Jews wouldn't have been saved. Maybe they deserved to be drowned too. It says that they were being judged that whole night because they were also idol worshippers. So it really had nothing to do with saving the Jews. Because the truth is that if God wanted to, he didn't have to have Paro chase after them altogether. They were already redeemed. So what happened by Kriyas Yamsuf was not specifically for the sake of the Jewish people, but for the sake of the world. It showed that God is the ruler of the world, and he judges those that are wicked and punishes them and saves those that are righteous. But not necessarily did it show anything particular about the Jewish people. It was more universal. So there were two ideas in Yetzias Mitzrayim. One was the particular redemption of the Jewish people that showed that God is the God of Israel. And the second, the more universal idea, that God's the God of the entire world. The first happened on the first day when they left Mitzrayim, when the Jewish people were saved. And the second happened in the seventh day, which was the culmination, which shows that God is the King of the whole world, which represents the fact that ultimately the completion of the Geula and the end of this process will be V'hoy Hashem l'melech al kol ha'aretz, when God will in fact be the King over the whole world, and that's when God will be one. But that's a long process. That's at the end of time. So the first day represents the beginning of the process, the seventh day, the end of the process, which didn't end then, but signified what was going to be in the future. And that's why, I think, it says, the 10 plagues are called the finger of God, Etzba Elohim, whereas the 50 plagues at the sea were called the hand of God. A finger shows the way, points to an idea. You don't, what's it called, except for the Three Stooges maybe, you don't hit somebody with your finger. Right, the it's just with your fist. So the finger represents showing a lesson. The 10 plagues show that God was the God of the Jewish people and championed their cause. It wasn't necessarily to punish the Egyptians per se because of the evil they did. It was to champion the cause, the case of the Jewish people. A finger. The Kriyas Yamsuf was a fist. There it was to punish the evildoers. Not necessarily because they did it to the Jewish people, because they did something evil. And God is the God of all the world, even if it's not just to champion the cause of the Jewish people. That's a fist. That's the hand. And that's why by Makas Bechoros, it wasn't so much to punish the evildoers, because many of the firstborn weren't necessarily the ones who enslaved the Jews. There were babies that were killed. Masha'in Cain, by the so therefore it wasn't to punish evildoers. It was to show that if you mess with my firstborn, I'm going to mess with your firstborn. Whereas by Kriyas Yamsuf, it was the perpetrators, the evildoers, that were punished. To show that God punishes, that God brings justice to the world. And not necessarily just for the sake of the Jewish people. And that's why Yisro was inspired and moved by Kriyas Yamsuf and not by Makas Bechoros. Because Makas Bechoros just showed that God is the God of Israel. So it's very nice, what does that do with me? But Kriyas Yamsuf showed that God is the God of the entire world. And therefore, now I know ki gadol Hashem mikol Elohim. God is greater than all the other powers, because God's the King of the universe, and therefore I, Yisro, who's not a Jew, also has to be inspired and affected. With that, I wanted to explain this. I've done in the past, but it fits with this idea very nicely. The following medrash. The medrash says that Moshe Rabbeinu said, Ba'oz chotasi, I sinned with the word oz, u'ba'oz ani mitaken, and I will correct my sin with the word oz. Where did he sin with the word oz? After he went to Paro for the first time, and things did not go well. Paro made it worse for the Jewish people. Moshe came with a complaint. Loma harioso loma zeh, loma zeh shlachtoni. Right? Why'd you send me? Why did you do bad to these people? Why'd you send me? U'me'oz, from the time I went to Paro, you know, things only got worse for these people, and you didn't save them. So the word Oz, the rabbis pick out, that symbolizes Moshe's sin. May Oz bossi el paro. How did he correct the sin? Later on, by Kriyas Yamsuf, he said, Oz yashir Moshe. Two problems. First of all, if I were to pick a word that symbolized Moses' sin, I would pick the first sentence, the first word. Loma hariosa. Why? Moses' sin was, who are you questioning God? Why are you questioning me? Not the word Oz, the beginning of the second sentence, may Oz, from the time I went to Paro, things just got worse. Why was that the symbol of the sin? The first word should have been the symbol of the sin, Lama. And secondly, how did Moshe Rabbeinu correct this by saying Oz Yashir? Moshe didn't say Oz Yashir. That's a narrative of the Torah. Moshe started with Ashir al Hashem. The Torah says Oz Yashir Moshe. It's a narrative. So how did Moshe correct that? So I want to say the following. The idea could be the following. Moshe Rabbeinu went to save the Jewish people, and his first mission was a failure, and didn't do anything for the Jewish people. So Moshe Rabbeinu had a right to ask God, why did that happen? Meaning, for what purpose? What am I supposed to learn from it? What are we supposed to learn from it? Why did things get worse? When Tsaras happened, when a person sees Yisurim happening to him, he's supposed to investigate his deeds and try to find a reason why it's happening. That's not a sin. You're not supposed to just accept it stoically. You're supposed to ask, what am I supposed to learn from this? Lama. Lama doesn't mean why. Lama means for what purpose? Lima, for what? I'm not asking you why. I don't want to understand your reasons, God. I just want to say what I'm supposed to learn from it. That's no sin. But Moshe's sin was the following. He made a statement. From the time I went to Paro, nothing got better. Now, for 210 years, God's name was not mentioned in Paro's palace. Before that, God's name was mentioned a lot when Yosef was around. Right? Paro himself said, wow, God gave you this wisdom or whatever. And Yosef made the Egyptians aware of God. But for 210 years it was forgotten. Ashelo Yadas, he didn't know Yosef, didn't know the God of Yosef. Right? Mi Hashem, Paro denied God. So for 210 years God's name was not mentioned in Paro's palace. All of a sudden Moshe comes and they start debating and talking about God. Paro says, who is God? What, I don't know this God, or whatever. And they start mentioning God's name. Moshe, don't you see that as a benefit? Nothing was good. Nothing happened. All you're concerned about is the particular status of the Jewish people. How about the status of God's Kiddush Hashem in the world? You went to Paro. You mentioned God's name. Paro had to start arguing with you. Yes, God. No, God. Something that wasn't mentioned for 210 years in Egypt. Wasn't that a benefit? Don't you consider that something? Why do you only look at the benefit of the Jewish people in particular and not in the bigger picture? That was Moshe's sin. How did he correct it? It says when the sea split, so there were three things that happened there. One is that the sea split, okay, and the second one was that the Jewish people went through, and the third thing was the Egyptians were drowned. Any one of those things could have happened independently. The sea could have split and showed there's a God in the world who created the world. Just like in the beginning of creation, he took the waters and divided between the dry land and the waters and made a place for man. That's what God did now. And he also took away the dry land from the people who don't deserve it. So this was like a reenactment of the creation of the world. In a certain degree, like I'll be meek people. So God wanted to show, V'yadu Mitzrayim ki ani Hashem, the Egyptians will know that I'm God. Now it says that the Jews didn't have to go through the sea. If anybody asks you, why did the Jewish people cross the sea? It's not to get to the other side. Because they didn't go to the other side. They made a U-turn and came back on the same side. So they didn't have to go into the sea. So it wasn't to cross the sea. And not only that, it could be the Jewish people would have been drowned. They were being judged. They were also idol worshippers. So the sea could have come back on them, right? They would have been the cause of this tremendous Kiddush Hashem, but they wouldn't have survived. And it could be the Egyptians shouldn't be drowned. But they were. Each thing was a separate thing. Three separate things. And we say it in what's it called? Ilu Karolano Asayan Velo Heviranu Besocho Becharova Dayenu. If God had split the sea and not let us pass through, it would have been enough. Ilu, what's it called? Heviranu Besocho Becharova Velo Shika Sarenu. If he would have passed us through and not drowned the Egyptians, also enough. Three separate things. When did Moshe Rabbeinu decide to sing the Shira? When the Jewish people were saved, or when he saw the miracle and the sea split, before he knew it was going to be good for the Jewish people or not? It says, Oz Yashir Moshe. Oz, Rashi says, Kishiros Hanes. When he saw the sea split, he corrected the sin. His sin, original sin, was to only look at the benefit of the Jewish people to decide if something's good or bad, and not to see the more universal impact. He corrected it because he was already decided to sing, even if the Jewish people wouldn't have benefited. Just the fact that the sea split and the world saw there's a God was kedai to sing for. That's the tikkun, the correction of the sin. And that's why it says that Oz Yosher Moshe in the future, Til Trias HaMesim, he saw the process that eventually would end when God would taka be accepted by the entire world, and the resurrection of the dead would come, and everything would unite under the Ribbono Shel Olam. And that's why the first day of Pesach, they sang Shir, they said Hallel. okay, on their personal redemption, okay? And Hallel Shir, that's it called, they said, Halayla Yiyalachem Kileil Hiskade Shir. Right? It says Shir in the masculine. That night they sang for something that was finished. They were redeemed from Egypt. That finished their part in the redemption. They were finished. They were redeemed. Okay, they said Shir. And that was for the fact that the Jewish people were saved. And you say Hallel whenever there are tsaros, whenever there are dangers to the Jewish people and they're saved from them, you say Hallel. That's one of the reasons to say Hallel. So when the and even though the firstborn were killed, and we say that how can my it says by Kriyas Yamsuf, my handiwork, my people are drowning in the sea, and you want to sing? So why could they sing when the firstborn? Because I'm singing not because they died. I'm singing because I was saved because of that. I have a right to sing for my own personal salvation. And the firstborn dying, I'm not singing for their dying, but I benefited from that. So therefore I'm singing. However, what's it called? However, on Kriyas Yamsuf, it was a Shira. And the Gemara says, no one said Shira until the Jewish people came. L'chor, they said Shir the week before. Other Marishon said Shir. All the other Shiros were finished. They were for a finished product. The Shira is feminine. The Gemara says the Shira represents the fact that there'll be other ones. Just like a woman gets pregnant and has more children or whatever, right? It's not the final. It's not like a Zohar is finished. It's going to bring others. And the idea being that here, by Kriyas Yamsuf, it wasn't for the redemption of the Jewish people. That was finished. It was for the process that would eventually would end with God being the king over the whole universe. That was a process that wouldn't end, that won't end until Tchias HaMeisim. So therefore they said Shira, and there they weren't allowed to say Shira for the Egyptians drowning, because they weren't singing for their own personal salvation. They were singing for the Kiddush Hashem. But if Kiddush Hashem had to come through people dying, you don't say what's it called, you don't say Hallel. You don't, what's it called? You can sing Shira, but not Hallel. You can sing Shira because you're singing the Shira, not on their death, but on the process that eventually this Kiddush Hashem will be complete. Okay, and it says that the Jewish people would have recognized that that's the main thing. They would have said Hashem Melech Olam Voed in the present tense, not Hashem Yimloch. They wouldn't have only seen that this is a beginning of a process. They would have seen Mamish, that God is the king over the whole world at that moment. Then no nation could have had any effect on us. And that's why on the seventh day of Pesach we read the Maftar of the Song of David, when he was victorious over all his enemies, including Shaul. There is not an idea of the Jewish people, because it was Jewish enemies. That's the idea of the Kiddush Hashem. David HaMelech represents Mashiach, and that's why the Babishers have Sudas HaMashiach on the seventh day of Pesach, because the seventh day of Pesach represents the final Geula, right? The process that will be, that set into motion the final Geula. First day, again, was the beginning of the Geula, the particular Geula of the Jewish people. The seventh day, universal Geula of the entire world. I was thinking that is also represented in the second part of the parasha. Vayidaber Hashem al Moshe ve'al Aaron be'eretz Mitzrayim le'emor. God speaks to Moshe and to Aaron. One of the few places where it says Moshe and Aaron. And he tells them the following: Hachodesh hazeh lochem rosh chodoshim. First mitzvah they were given is Kiddush Hachodesh. This month for you is the choice month, Nisan. This is when you went out of Egypt. For you, it's the choice. Special month for you. Hach rosh chodoshim. Rosh means muvchar, special, choice. Rishon hu lochem, however, it's the beginning. L'chodesh Hashanah for all the other months. It's the choice one, but it's also a beginning of a process of the whole year. I was thinking the idea is the following. Rosh Chodesh Nisan has two aspects to it, like we said. One, the particular redemption of the Jewish people, their benefit, particularly, privately, personally. But it also began the process for when God will be the king over the whole world, right? Which we mentioned on the seventh day. Okay, so therefore we say, what's it called? It's Hachodesh Hazeh Lochem. That's your particular benefit. but it's Rishon, it's also the beginning of a process that you're going to be involved in, of bringing God's recognition to the entire world as an Or LaGoyim. Okay, and therefore Nisan, and that is going to bring about the seventh month, which is also the seventh, just like the seventh day of Pesach. The seventh month is Tishrei. Nisan is Pesach, is where we say Mekadesh Yisrael, the Hasmanim, and we say that, what's it called, that the three regalim is to go and see Ha'adon Elokei Yisrael, the God of Israel. That's Sholosh Regalim. That's Nisan, Pesach starts that. But Tishrei is when we say in Shmoneh Esrei, Meloch al kol ha'olam kulo, Melech al kol ha'aretz, then we speak about God being the God of the entire world, not just the Jewish people. But we are the ones who are going to help bring that about. Okay, so therefore, Nisan is both the choice month in itself, particularly, but it's also the beginning of a process which culminates, not culminates, but reaches its zenith at the seventh month, which is right there in the middle, right, the number seven, which is God over the whole world. Same idea. That's why Moshe and Aaron were spoken to. Moshe represents the Jewish people. Moshe gave us the Torah. The Torah is Torah for Klal Yisrael. Moshe, it says, was equal to the entire Jewish people. Moshe is the particular for the Jewish people. But Aaron, what does Aaron say? Right, Oev Shalom, Rodei Shalom, Oev Es Habrios, the whole world. And he was the Kohen who served in the Beis HaMikdash, which is basically Beis Tfilah L'chol HaAmim. It's a place of prayer for the whole world, the Beis HaMikdash. And the Korbanos help for the whole world, not just for the Jewish people. It says if the Goyim would know what benefit they would get from the Beis HaMikdash, they would have protected it, not destroyed it. That's why Moshe and Aaron. God wanted to tell us two things. One is this month is special, particularly for the Jewish people, but it's also the beginning of a process that will affect the entire world. Moshe represents the Jewish people. Aaron represents the effect on the entire world. So God spoke to both of them because both ideas are there. And that's why Sefer Bereishis starts with telling us what the place of the Jewish people is, that it belongs to them and they're holy and that the place is holy. Why does Sarah Bereishis, Rashi says, to tell me that we have a claim on Eretz Yisrael. Place, two people can't be in the same place at the same time. Place shows individual importance. Right? Everybody has their place in this world. The book of Bereishis starts by telling us the importance of the Avos, the particular importance of the Jewish people. Bereishis Bar Elohim, God created the world for the sake of the Jewish people, for the sake of the Torah, and we have a place that's our place, particular, that's what's it called, that is Bereishis, up until the first mitzvah, Shenistavu by Yisrael, the first mitzvah, acknowledges that specialness of the Jewish people, HaChodesh HaZeh Lachem, Rosh Chodoshim, but it also tells us there's a process over here that you're going to have to bring this message to the whole world. Rishon Hu Lachem L'Chodesh HaShana. And therefore, the first mitzvah was a mitzvah of time. Time is different than place. Place, only one person can occupy a place. Everybody has their place. Time, everybody benefits from the time equally. So time represents the God of the entire world, whereas place represents the God of the Jewish people. And that's why the mitzvahs in Bereishis, before this idea, were to create the Jewish people, the individual, the specialness of the Jewish people. What mitzvahs were in Bereishis? Bris Milah, which is a mitzvah specifically for the Jewish people, and Gid Hanoshe, to remember Yaakov Avinu, why he got his name Yisrael. Right, and Pruer Vod, filling up the world, because the world was created for the Jewish people, ultimately. But the first mitzvah that was given to the Jewish people as a people was already for the entire world too, not just for them. Yes, part of it is to tell you special, but your specialness is to bring this message to the whole world. Okay, that's why the first mitzvah also was the mitzvah of Kiddush HaChodesh, calculating the calendar, the times, because later on in the Torah, in Devarim, it says, Kihi chochmaschem ubinaschem la'enei ha'amin. This is your wisdom and understanding in the eyes of the nations of the world. The Gemara says, what? Where did Goyim see our wisdom? They see it in the fact that we can make the calculations for making the new month and the new year and when to calculate the years or whatever. That is in the eyes of the nations too. So the first mitzvah is something that took that particular importance of the Jewish people and put it into the universal perspective, the eternal perspective of bringing this message to the whole world. And that's why it was Kiddush HaChodesh, because that's something that even the Goyim can appreciate. And that's why here it's already hinted to the idea of not just making a month, but making a year. And the years and the months have to go together, meaning that the solar year and the lunar year have to be balanced. The solar year represents the nations of the world. The lunar year represents the Jewish people. And you see that you have to consider them also and balance them out. Because we're concerned about the entire world, not just that we should recognize and be redeemed, but to bring the whole world to redemption. And that's why it says two geulas. The culmination of geula, at least according to the Vilna Gaon, and the four kosos, are for three things. The first two, I'll take you out of Egypt, that's personal. I'll save you from servitude, that's personal. The goalti eschem, I'll redeem you. But it says twice redeeming. The goalti eschem is roan etuya, with an outstretched arm, that's protecting you, still personal. Veshvatim gedolim refers to Kriyas Yamsuf, and I'm going to punish the evildoers, not necessarily because of you, because they're evil. Because I'm concerned with evil and righteousness in the entire world, not just for your sake. So that's the second vigoalti. That's the completion of the process. And that's why the third kos, that the Seder corresponds to the four kosos, the four cups of the four lashonos. So the first two have to do with Kiddush, that's particular, about the Jewish people. God chose us from the nations, that's a particular thing. The second kos is before we eat our meal. The meal is also a personal thing. Eating is a very personal thing. I can't eat for you. I eat for me. It changes me, it doesn't change you. And the third kos is benching. That's the particular geula, the finish of it. I finish the meal, I'm benching the Rabbanu Shalom for my personal thing, for my food, and for what's special about the Jewish people. Bris and Torah, that's all in benching. Malchus Yisrael, Beis HaMikdash, that's all Jewish. The last kos is keneged the geula of the final process, which is over the whole world. That's what we say Halil, and Shir, what's it called? The Shir of the final God ruling over the whole world. Where do we start on that fourth coast? Kosh Eliyahu, when Mashiach will come. And Shvoch Hamaskal Kolagoyim Ashaloyu De'ucha, that God should pour his wrath over the nations that don't know him. Nothing to do with the Jewish people. And Hallel, the last part of Hallel, which has to do with, what's it called, with the future when God will be the king over the whole world. So that's the fourth coast. That's the, after all the personal things in the Seder, comes the universal part of the Seder, which is the last idea of Geula, the Geula that will affect the entire world. That is, I think, a reasonable understanding of why there was Makas Bechoros, that was part of the particular redemption, and Kriyas Yamsuf was part of the process of the universal redemption that was triggered when Klal Yisrael went out of Mitzrayim and will end when V'hoi Hashem L'melech al kol ha'aretz b'yom ahu yi Hashem echad l'shmecha. Okay, well, I just want to add one thing since I see that on the board. I don't know how many of you can vote, but there's two ideas in every vote. The particular, what are we going to benefit, right? What's our tzibur going to benefit, right? We'll draft yeshiva bachrim, they'll get more monies for yeshiva, whatever. That's the particular. But you also have to take in consideration, what is the Kiddush Hashem in general? Not just what we're going to benefit, what's going to be more of a Kiddush Hashem? You can't just look at it as, who am I going to vote for that what's going to benefit me the most? Because of that, it's vade that you have to vote for a party that at least says that it what's it called, is based on Torah. Because where's the Kiddush Hashem going to come from? Party? It's not like that. You may benefit from it, but that's only the particular thing. That's not the universal thing. And every person should therefore vote for a party that's a Torah party that represents the Torah sages that he follows and other things. So pretty much the yeshiva world, right, or the Ashkenazi or Litvish yeshiva world, which Esha Torah is part of, right, follow the Gedolim who happen to be leading Yahadus HaTorah, which is Gimel. So it seems very clear that if you take both considerations, not just what am I going to gain personally, but how is this going to affect universally Kiddush Hashem, that you can't vote for a party that's not a Torah party, because that's surely not going to make a Kiddush Hashem. It may benefit you, but it's not going to benefit the world Torah wise. So this situation is for sure not the ideal, but it's the lesser of two evils, at least, to have people that are follow Das Torah and Das Gedolei Yisrael, and even though there are arguments about Gedolei Yisrael, that's their business, but they'll work it out. But Lamai said that we have to be soldiers. The generals can argue about what strategy to use, but the soldiers have to be soldiers and follow the whatever in the end the generals agree amongst themselves. That's what you do. Okay. Yes.
You were saying that on the first day of Pesach they sang Shir because because they were already redeemed.
Because that was the end of right of their personal redemption.
So they were really redeemed before they left.
Well, they were potentially, yeah, because God, they could have gone out at night. Paro wanted to throw them out at night. But they said, we're waiting to go like Menchim in the daytime. So really, potentially it was gone. It was finished already in the daytime.